Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Okay, let's get this out of the way. Josh?
Yes?
Merry Christmas.
All right, that's the one.
That's
it for Christmas.
I got to be honest. I have had about enough of these holidays dealing with family, dealing with friends, dealing with drama. And so you were talking about what we were going to talk about this week, and I say we take a break from the holidays.
We do. We can tell people, though, you can still go to adamandeve.com for Christmas.
Yes, you can.
So we do have to mention it in that regard.
Okay, so... All right, let's say I want to get...
Your ass pounded for Christmas?
No. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to. Let's say I want to get someone a gift for Christmas, and let's say that this someone happens to have sexual needs that need to be fulfilled.
You go to adamandeve.com, and Santa Claus will deliver to you an item at 50% off, and then Rudolph will also give you free shipping. He will ship it to you for free in the United States. And then one of the other reindeer, whose name I can't remember, will also send you a mystery gift. And then Pinky and the Brain, who have infiltrated Santa's workshop, will also give you 3 free DVDs.
Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen, Prancer, Dancer.
Donna Dixon?
good one, but no, I
it's from the Simpsons Christmas special. Donna
come
Dixon?
On, come on, Donna, get that sleigh moving.
You bastard. You fat fuck, if you lost weight, we could...
Anyway.
But yes, go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC to get all these lovely things, and maybe Santa and Pinky and the Brain and Donner and Rudolph will help you.
So,
okay, would this show have been better if one or more of us had been replaced? Would Lost in the Static be the same if it was, say, Todd Sheets and a talking monkey, which is kind of redundant?
Todd Sheets and a talking monkey, that's kind of like me, Todd Sheets, and you.
You're not nearly as cool as Todd Sheets. Never. The reason I bring it up is...
I try. So
the reason I bring it up is tonight's topic is going to be what if. And not like made up what ifs, but what ifs that almost happened in movies, games, and whatnot. Whether it was a just asinine casting decision that would have radically altered a movie, an original script of a movie or a TV show or a video game that was just batshit insane, okay, or anything. Like... This is what I'm about to tell you is actually true. This almost happened in the early 70s. John Lennon bought the rights to the Lord of the Rings trilogy and wanted to make a musical out of that as a movie starring the Beatles with himself starring as Gollum. That almost happened, Scott.
You know, I think that one may have almost been cool.
I don't. I think that was a narrowly avoided disaster.
I don't know. I mean, well, is this, you said early 70s. So
this is like 71, 72.
So this is just the drug-riddled, messed up Beatles.
Could you have seen John Lennon as Gollum? I could maybe see Yoko Ono as Gollum.
You took the joke right out of my mouth.
She's pretty monotone as it is and only has a few phrases.
And now we shall sing the songs
number eight,
of the Hobbit. And now we shall sing the songs of the Hobbit as we go through this mountain to Smaug's cave. Are you ready?
And you know, all the Beatles were going to star in it, and they were going to get their rock star friends.
God.
And I think he said Alice Cooper was going to play a role in all this. And you just kind of go,
now
what? But that what actually, mind? I think that's a disaster.
No, I think Alice Cooper, who is a really cool guy.
I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan.
Yeah, I mean, really cool guy, really nice guy. So, saw him on Top Gear the other day. Great appearance. I think he should be given more roles in more movies.
I don't. Have you ever seen Monster Dog? I've seen the horror movies he's starred in. There's a reason John Carpenter gave him almost no dialogue in Prince of Darkness, okay, Scott? I love Alice Cooper's music, and he's an awesome dude. Not a great actor.
Yeah, Hot for Teacher, one of the best songs ever. Alice.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. I'm in a trolley mood.
Well, stop it. But so you have things like that. And eventually, for whatever reason, I can't imagine why they couldn't find financial backers for this Lord of the Rings movie. I can't imagine why.
Because everyone who was in Hollywood who was between the pot and cocaine, because that's what the 70s were. They were between the pot and cocaine. They were that transitional decade.
Heroin wasn't chic yet, right?
Heroin. Well, that heroin chic came in late 80s, early 90s. You know, that's... But nonetheless, so they were between these two particular drugs, and for a moment they had a moment of lucidity that they went, fuck no.
Well, and eventually the rights ended up reverting, and then Rankin Bass got The Hobbit, and Ralph Bakshi got Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
I liked The Hobbit.
I don't think I've ever seen the Rankin Bass.
You've never
Hobbit.
Seen the Rankin. It's actually quite good. First of all, inspired casting for the voice of Gandalf.
Okay.
John Huston.
Oh.
John Huston as Gandalf. Oh. That is fucking inspired voice casting right there.
Yes. I always kind of wanted to see Jeremy Irons do Gandalf, at least the voice.
No, because he'd have too much drywall in his mouth from chewing all the scenery. No. But John Huston, perfect as Gandalf.
Okay.
And then the Bakshi version. He made a lot of bad decisions on that. He was a drug addict at the time, and
yes,
you can tell.
Yeah, well, the Bakshi version. I got to be honest. The Bakshi version of Lord of the Rings scared the crap out of me as a child, and I don't know why. Because I saw it when I was very, very young.
The mix of live action and animation, or
I don't know what it was. I think that may be part of it. The liberal use of almost Nazi like imagery for the orcs and stuff like that. It was. Yeah,
the Balrog literally being just a stagehand in Halloween makeup.
Yes.
Again, you thought this was a good idea, Ralph, right? And I'm a Ralph Bakshi fan, but not of that film.
Wizards, excellent movie.
I love Wizards.
Yes, excellent.
I love his TV series, and Spicy City. And
I have to thank one of our listeners. The name, for some reason, escapes me right now, and I feel awful for that, and I'm terribly sorry. But one of our listeners pointed out Coonskin.
Coonskin and Heavy Traffic, yes.
I checked out. I haven't seen Heavy Traffic yet, but I checked out.
It's the same style with that, like, almost live action backgrounds with animated characters. Okay. It's the same style as Coonskin.
Very.
It's got
well
a lot of the same racial overtones that got him in a lot of trouble.
I'll admit, I'm not a Fritz the Cat fan.
I can appreciate Fritz the Cat for what it is.
Yeah, but it just.
Well, and in 1969, to have the balls to make a cartoon like that,
it was
you have to respect its place in history.
I will respect its place in history. I don't particularly find it to be a very good or engaging work anymore, but it was certainly ballsy.
And I'll give you that, but if you can place it in its proper time, but we're way off topic.
Okay, but so so the Beatles, Lord of the Rings, didn't happen for good or for bad, because I don't know. There may have been just enough drug-riddled creativity there.
Could have been like a midnight movie.
Yeah, it could have been a decent midnight movie or something like that. I could see that happening.
I think it's the only way that people wouldn't look at Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings as the worst adaptation of that source material ever.
Oh, okay, so what you're obviously you've kept up with this a whole lot more. I know about a few when we talked about The Matrix.
Yes, how Will Smith was the original choice.
Yeah, the original role was for Will Smith.
And I'm not a Keanu Reeves fan. And Will Smith can act. He chooses not to in most of his big budget movies, but he can. But I just think he would have played that character absolutely wrong. I don't think, but this is obviously looking at it from a retrospective. We're looking at it as having seen Keanu Reeves in this movie for a good 13 years now.
Yeah. See, I look at Keanu Reeves, and I have to admit, that was good casting for that role.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, he was your John Everyman when he kind of started, and he was more or less completely overwhelmed, and that whoa feeling I mean, the mind-blowing concept shit. So, yeah, that whoa feeling is exactly what I would feel in that role. So I think it kind of worked. I'm afraid, looking back at Will Smith, what I would fear had he been in that role is that we would have gotten something like what he played in Independence Day.
I also am afraid that, oh, hell no, would have had to been worked into the script at least at some point, because it seems to be in every single Will Smith movie.
Well, yeah.
All right, how about this? Classic comedy, Blazing Saddles.
Okay.
Instead of Cleavon Little, role was written for and by Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor co-wrote that script with Mel Brooks, and he attempted to star in it, but Richard Pryor was so controversial, the studio said they were going to pull their backing if Pryor starred in this movie at that point.
You know what? I didn't know Pryor helped write that movie.
Yes, he co-wrote it, which you can see where a lot of the racial humor came from.
Now that you say that, looking back on it now, I'm like, where are all the white women at? That's a Richard Pryor line there.
Yes, and he is credited, so it's not like a mystery. He's probably missed his name in the credits.
Paid attention, frankly.
But having him play Bart, would that have really changed that role for you? I think it would have, because Cleavon Little did a great job, but his acting style is absolutely different than Richard Pryor's.
Yeah, I think Richard Pryor never played a good straight man. He was never a good straight man.
Yeah, he was always the wacky one.
And him and
Gene Wilder
together, I think that would have been way too much wacky. Because Gene Wilder, also not the best straight man in the world.
Great as the Waco kid, and he was a relatively straight man.
Yeah, he was relatively.
Not making
but
a gay joke of his. What do you want to do? I don't know. Screw. We'll play chess.
But, you know, I think also when we see Richard Pryor and The Toy and some of his kids' works notwithstanding, but you look at Richard Pryor and things like Blue Streak and things like that, and you expect this racially controversial,
almost
out there,
almost ready to snap kind of
guy. Almost ready to snap kind of guy. And I don't think that the role in Blazing Saddles called for that. The sheriff in Blazing Saddles has to. He was the kind of role where you have to have your wits about you. I mean, pulling a gun on yourself. It's brilliant move. Yes, it proves that the townspeople were all idiots, but a brilliant move, and you have to have your wits about you to keep that. And
but
we
on
don't
a writing
expect
level,
that from
that. That's also a very Pryor thing, yes, too. That's a very Richard Pryor, yes, moment in the script, too.
Yes.
But then on that same note, sticking with Black Bart, when they tried to turn that into a TV series in the mid-70s, a then unknown Louis Gossett Jr. played Bart.
Really? Wait a minute. They tried to turn Blazing Saddles into a...
Yes, it was called Black Bart.
I've never seen it.
It only had a pilot, which never... it aired in like the early 2000s on the now-defunct Trio channel. Or no, late 90s, actually. On the now-defunct Trio channel. But yeah, I've got it. It's awful because they sanitized everything.
I was going to say they're going to have to.
But a then unknown Louis Gossett Jr. played Bart.
Interesting.
So, you know, that was an interesting bit of weird casting that Louis Gossett Jr.
See, I look at Louis Gossett Jr.
You just can't?
And
you can't see it?
What I see with Louis Gossett Jr. is the Iron Eagle type role that he played. The stand-up, badass lieutenant. And I don't know if he was a lieutenant or what, but, you know, the stand-up, badass lieutenant. That's the kind of role that he deserves, not the witty, wacky sheriff that's been sanitized all to hell. But, you know, yeah, it doesn't quite work in my brain.
All right, staying in the same racial category, I'm a huge Avery Brooks fan, okay?
Yes.
Love Avery Brooks, and you know Captain Sisko is one of my all-time favorites.
I'm a fan of Avery Brooks, too. As an actor, he's incredible.
The role of Captain Benjamin, then Commander Benjamin Sisko, was originally written for James Earl Jones. Just how different would Captain Sisko have been with James? Because the role was originally written as an older character, so it was technically a different version of the character as well. But could you have seen James Earl Jones commanding Deep Space Nine?
That would have been interesting, and I think...
The only reason he didn't do it is he couldn't commit to a regular TV series.
See, it's that would have been interesting. Frankly, I think James Earl Jones would have fit better on the bridge of Battlestar Galactica in like the Adama role.
Yeah.
I don't know why he fits better, but somehow that fits.
But maybe we're sullied by the badass Sisko that, you know, punches Q. I can't see James Earl Jones having punched a Q in the face.
Yeah, me either. I think we would have ended up with a Sisko that was closer to Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, I can't see, because the guy on SF Debris, he has the perfect nickname for the Defiant, Ben Sisko's motherfucking pimp hand.
Exactly.
It's the USS Ben Sisko's motherfucking pimp hand.
That's exactly.
And I can't see the James Earl Jones version of that character having been that Ben Sisko's motherfucking pimp hand kind of guy.
I certainly don't see, I mean, the way the characters that James Earl Jones plays, especially if they're in a commanding or a militant role. I mean, even think back to his voicing in The Lion King. You've got the king who, yes, he's dead, but he's trying to put his son on the right track.
Right.
And do the right thing. And even voicing Vader, you know, you see that turnaround with Luke, and you see him going, wait, this is my son. I'm going to do the right thing. And with the command decisions that Sisko had to make, especially during the war,
especially during the Dominion War later on.
Yeah, during the Dominion War and whatnot, I don't think James Earl Jones would have had the right command persona to make those decisions.
Okay, then how about the second choice before they finally settled on Avery Brooks was Tony Todd? Tony Todd was the next choice for Ben Sisko.
I'm sorry, the face isn't coming to my brain for Tony Todd. What would I
Ben say? From the Night of the Living Dead 1990 remake.
Oh, okay.
He actually had been on Star Trek numerous times as Worf's brother, Kern.
Oh, okay.
And,
okay.
On both Deep Space Nine and Next Generation.
Yeah.
And he's on Babylon 5. And he's the guy that plays like the mortician that knows about death in all the Final Destination movies, the Candyman and whatnot. He was their second choice.
I could see he certainly has the presence. Especially if you look at his work in Candyman. He's got that intimidating presence that... Avery Brooks, it was a really interesting the way that he played that character, because he could be a loving, caring father in 1 second, and then somebody on the bridge...
And then he'd assassinate a motherfucker in the next minute.
Exactly. I was going to say, and then somebody on the bridge pissed him off, and he pimp-slapped him. Or, in the case of the Defiant, an entire race of people pissed him off and he pimp slapped him.
Yes. You
know? So, you know, it's, I could see Todd having that kind of a command presence, but where I have problems seeing Tony Todd then is on the other side that Avery Brooks played, that caring father role. Could he pull it off? I'm sure he could. I'm sure he's an excellent actor, but I've never seen it, so I wouldn't expect
it. You always see him as the military, like the absolute psychopath he played in The Rock.
Exactly. Exactly. You always see that side of him and that hard-ass side of him. I think pulling off the softer side of Avery Brooks.
Well, see, the thing I liked about Avery Brooks as Sisko, after season 2, when they let him really, you know, cut loose and have a little creative control of his own character, he was Hawk from Spencer for Hire in Space.
Yeah.
You know, you know how I ended up connecting Star Trek to St. Elsewhere?
Yes.
There's got to be some way that's actually Hawk's descendant is the Siskos or something.
It could very well be.
You know, I've got to figure out some way to do that. But
okay.
But then staying with Star Trek, I love this actor. And he ended up being a Star Trek regular. Jeffrey Combs was the second choice for Commander Riker if Jonathan Frakes said no. Jeffrey Combs was their next choice.
Hmm.
I love Jeffrey Combs. I just cannot see him as Will Riker.
No, and again, for those of us that don't know the name Jeffrey Combs, what role would I have seen him in?
Herbert West in the Reanimator movies. He's been in everything.
Okay.
Jeffrey Combs is in everything.
I'm sorry. I'm really bad with names. You know that. Seriously, Henry, it's good to have you here today, but I'm terrible with names, Todd. I don't see it. And again, we're talking.
I could have seen him as Data, maybe.
Maybe.
But not as Riker.
No, we're talking about that stone face persona versus that softness.
That quirky.
That quirkiness that Riker brought.
Well, okay, then how about this?
By the way, I have to say this. If he ever hears this, don't shave the beard again. Jonathan Frakes looks really strange without facial hair. Just keep.
I remember when he was a low rent drug dealer on Hill Street Blues with no facial hair, getting beat up by Belker in an alley.
Babyface Riker?
Yes. Yeah, Babyface Riker as a heroin dealer getting beat up by Belker in an alley in our first season Hill Street Blues.
See, that's the thing. Without the beard, Babyface. You just want to look at him and he tries to take command of a starship and he's, bring it around and fire phasers. Oh. He wants to fire the phasers. Oh.
All right. Well, one that we were talking about right before we started recording. Now, this is before Ang Lee got involved with the Hulk disaster of 2000.
Okay. Okay.
But, and, Eric Bana starred in that.
Yes.
For years, almost 2 years, they'd been in pre-production of a Hulk movie starring David Duchovny as Bruce Banner. And you were telling me you just could not, you can't see it.
Looking at it, I can't see him as the Hulk. I can't see the rage inside Duchovny. And I think X-Files spoiled me on that, because for years on X-Files, just the worst shit in the world was happening to David Duchovny, and he was very stone faced and still very caring. It took him a long time to express that caring side to Scully. It took him a long time to honestly get angry about the abduction of his sister. You're like, where is your? I would be pissed and to kill some motherfuckers. Okay.
Like the current David Duchovny series, Californication. In the pilot episode, he's railing Paula Marshall from behind, doggy style, and then they're both high, so they both end up throwing up on a $100,000 painting.
Nice.
Okay, and I showed that to a friend, and he goes, no, Mulder wouldn't do that. And he just, it's Mulder. And I'm like, oh, if you think that, I got to show you Twin Peaks where David Duchovny played a chick. You've never seen it? Remember him on Twin Peaks where he was a transvestite agent?
Yeah.
You want to see Mulder as a full-on chick.
Yeah, that would be. See, but I don't know. I could kind of see, Duchovny as non-Hulk doctor.
Dr. Banner.
Like, in the Avengers, I could see him playing that role. But then when he Hulks out, you're like, no. Because that they would CG his face onto a big Hulk body.
Yeah.
And it would just be like, no.
What have the aliens done to Mulder now?
Yeah, exactly. I could see it. It has potential. But I don't think it would. I got to admit, for as much of a disaster as that Ang Lee movie was, and it really was a disaster.
Yes.
You got to admit, Eric Bana wasn't bad for the part.
I have not seen the Edward Norton version, so I don't know if he was better or worse than the Eric Bana version.
A little better, actually. A little bit better.
Well, sticking with superheroes, now this is not a casting thing, but do you remember in the mid-80s, I think it was 86, when Canon Films, before they went bankrupt, was developing a Spider-Man movie, then to be directed by Tobey Hooper?
Okay.
Do you remember this?
No.
Well, Ted Newsom wrote the second script, the first script. Now, you got to remember, Canon was run by two old Israeli guys in their 60s.
Yeah, I've...
Golan and Globus, okay?
Yes.
They bought Spider-Man because they knew it was popular. And they had no clue what Spider-Man was. They thought Spider-Man was like the Wolfman, that it was a guy that would turn into a giant spider with arms coming out of his back at night and things. So that's what they commissioned their first script for. I'm not joking. Now imagine if somebody had not stopped them and that Spider-Man movie that Glon and Globus dictated actually got made.
Okay, that would have been awesome. That would have been awesome. Are you kidding?
It would have been worse than the Catwoman movie.
Oh, I know, but oh my God, I would have loved that. That would have, because if you could turn it into a series. Eventually you'll have the Spider-Man meets the Wolfman meets Frankenstein and Abbott and Costello.
Costello's corpse.
Yeah, exactly. Zombie Costello.
All right. Now, how about directors? Both of these people were offered Return of the Jedi. Now, how different would Return of the Jedi have been if Ridley Scott had taken that instead of... At the time, he dropped it to do Dune, which he ended up dropping out of as well. But if Ridley Scott had made Return of the Jedi...
It certainly wouldn't have been as happy as it was.
You got to remember, this is 1983, just off Blade Runner, Ridley Scott.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This is just before Legend. So I have issues with that because Legend had some of those elements in it too.
Yeah. But I think Return of the Jedi would have been a much darker film, both aesthetically and...
Well, keeping that in mind, their other choice was David Lynch. Yes, David Lynch was offered Return of the Jedi. Ironically enough, Ridley Scott dropped Return of the Jedi to do Dune and then dropped out of that. David Lynch dropped Return of the Jedi to do Dune and did it. So everyone who dropped Return of the Jedi went and did Dune in some capacity.
Yay.
But David Lynch, Return of the Jedi.
Again, it would have been.
Are you having trouble seeing it?
I'm having trouble seeing it, frankly, because Return of the Jedi, you think yub yub and the cute little happy dancing Ewoks, especially at the end, and this great big musical number of how great it is that the Empire is now dead, even though it really isn't.
Assassinating the Emperor doesn't make it mean an Empire falls. There's fallback. Never mind. But
I know we'll get there, but. I think that aspect would have been addressed. Just assassinating an emperor doesn't make the entire empire fall. I think that would have been addressed under both David Lynch or Ridley Scott.
But could you see aesthetically just how different it would have felt? Like it wasn't a Star Wars movie anymore.
It would have felt... I think because Lucas does have those marketing rights and because he does have that picture in his head of what that movie should have been, blah, blah, with the extra nose and all of that.
Yeah.
I think that some of the aesthetics, it definitely would have stayed, it would have been a recognizable Star Wars movie, but it would have been closer to Aliens in aesthetic. That, again, there would have been more darkness and who knows, maybe H.R. Giger would have... made the
H.R. Giger did the original design for the sandworms in Dune that were rejected for looking too much like penises.
Okay, yeah, I could see it. I could see it. And Giger would make a sandworm look like a penis. That's just Giger's style. And look, here's the big spice mining compound that kind of looked like a big globe.
Yeah, that would have been a big cunt.
No, it would have been a big boob. it definitely, there would have been a pair, and they would have had nipples on them somewhere. They would have looked like boobs. But
all right, dipping back to Spider-Man, James Cameron tried to make a Spider-Man movie in 1990. How would a James Cameron? Keep in mind, this is pre-Terminator 2,
pre-Titanic, pre.
Yes. Would a James Cameron Spider-Man movie have worked?
Standing on top of the Empire State Building. I'm the king of the world. yeah, I think it would have. I do. Cameron, for all his faults and all his happiness, he does get that teenage angsty feeling downright. And when you really dive into the Spider-Man stories,
the script in for Cameron, though, he was a college student. Peter Parker was in his early 20s, so he wasn't a teen.
You would still have that angsty going, because that teen angst starts about 12 and lasts until about 20,
30.
Yeah, and so I think it's still, I think it would have worked.
All right, then how about this? Again, this, they had pre-production drawings and everything done. When Oliver Stone in 1994 tried to do a remake of Planet of the Apes, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay, you had me up until the starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, and then when Schwarzenegger dropped out, he wanted George Clooney. But Oliver Stone, pre-insanity, this is right after Natural Born Killers, Oliver Stone doing Planet of the Apes.
I think we would have ended up with Planet of the Apes with that 1990. I think it definitely would have had that 1990s color palette feel to it. I think we would have, we natural born banana eaters. But I think we would have ended up with, number one, something better than that god awful.
That 1998 Tim Burton atrocity.
1998 Tim Burton one. I think we would have ended up, I think, in a strange way, I think it may have worked.
Clooney or Schwarzenegger?
Clooney. Clooney, you can't, and this is
height of ER. This is right when ER was about, you know, when it's just, ER had just started. Right.
This is for the astronaut role.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The yeah. Charlton Heston role, for you, lack of a better
you
term.
You can't, in that kind of a role, number one, he's a fucking scientist. He's an astronaut. He's a scientist. You wouldn't have had big buff on the left. Let us study these isotopes in space as I go through with light speed and see, you know, Arnold can't play a scientist. It just doesn't work. But, you know, hello, I am Arnold Schwarzenegger. Bring me the precipitate. You know, we must mix it with the solution. And blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work.
He governed a state for 8 years.
No, he didn't. Have you looked at California's budget?
I didn't say he governed it well. I just said he governed it.
Yeah, you could have elected, and I don't mean that as like
a literal weasel.
A literal weasel would have done a better job with that state's budget than Arnie did, okay? Plus, I am the Republican in charge of California. Buy everyone guns and take away their health care. You know, no.
I do this while I'm railing the maid.
Exactly. No, you can't have that kind of a role in a scientist role. George Clooney would have pulled it off. I think, I mean, look at him, and this is going to be a weird comparison, but look at him in Ocean's 11. Ocean's 11, he was calculating, he knew what he could do, and what kind of people he had to surround himself with.
No, I'll give you a different one.
Okay.
Out of Sight. George Clooney in Out of Sight, where he was, you know, that calculating, smooth as hell criminal.
Yes, that's what you need in the Planet of the Apes, especially if, you know, Clooney would have done a good job seducing the woman. Oh God, fans are shouting at their radio.
The human woman?
No, not the human woman.
Zira.
Zira, thank you.
Because the human woman was Nova.
Right, Zira and Nova. But he would have done... You've got to have that kind of a smooth... I have to seduce ape woman through bars.
Even simians melt for George Clooney. For 90s George Clooney.
I melt for 90s George Clooney. I mean, you know, can you blame me? You know, but you've got to have that kind of smooth personality. You can't have... Again, Arnold, Zira, come here. I want to make love to you. You know, it doesn't work.
Well, staying with Arnold, for the longest time, they were making an iRobot film with him.
Instead of Will Smith?
Well, that eventually was like 10 years later. This is in the 90s. They were trying, well, they've been trying to make one since the 80s. By the way, Harlan Ellison's iRobot script that was rejected.
Yes.
Back when Irwin Kershner, director of Empire Strikes Back,
yes,
was tagged to direct, is a fucking amazing. And it was called unfilmable because, got to remember, in 1982, this was high. They estimated it would have required about $112 million budget.
And I'll bet.
And nowadays,
I was going to say,
they wouldn't even balk at that. But in 1982, it was no fucking way.
Yeah. And I'll bet they could film it now for even less. But yeah, I
but you, I'm just saying it's been collected in book form, his script. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend Harlan Ellison's iRobot script.
I'll have to look through that.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
I will definitely have to look through that.
But they weren't using that script when Arnold was tagged to it.
Oh, okay.
But Arnold in iRobot, again, you need the street suave character, and I just don't see Arnold doing that. I just don't.
There's a big difference between badass and slick. There are two kinds of badass out there. There's the big buff badass that he shows up on set and you know that he is just going to kill every motherfucker in the room. And that's the kind of badass that Arnold in his prime, Terminator-like prime, was.
Raw deal.
Yeah, exactly. You show up and you just kill every motherfucker in the room and that's the movie. Then there's the slick one. And he's the one that shows up and outsmarts every motherfucker in the room. And that's the kind of character that I think the lead role in the detective in iRobot, I don't like what they did with the film with Will Smith because they departed from the original story from a long way took it from this amazing cerebral make you think type thing into look at the cool robots and watch them kick them in the butt.
It's CGI.
Yeah. So yeah, Arnold can't pull off the slick. Like his version of Total Recall, the way they rewrote it, it fit him. It was the, I'm going to go to Mars and kill every motherfucker on the planet that crosses me bad. And that worked amazingly well. If you look at the actual, what the hell's the name of the story that Total Recall was based on?
We Can Remember It For You Wholesale.
Thank you. By
Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, if you look at the Philip K. Dick story, and had they stuck to the story a lot more closely than they actually did, then you would need that street smart, slick type outsmarty, not the killy, the outsmarty.
Especially the ending.
Yeah. And so there are roles that Arnold and people like him can't pull off.
All right. Now, how about this one? Both these next ones are with the same actor who dropped out for different reasons, but technically, he still is in a couple of scenes. Jean-Claude Van Damme as the Predator. He was originally the guy in the Predator costume.
See, Jean-Claude...
He dropped out when he found out, due to his ego, that you would not be able to see his face in the entire movie. That's he didn't want any part. But there are still a few scenes on the commentary, they say. There's still a few shots where it's Jean-Claude in the costume, jumping around in trees and shit.
See, but Jean-Claude, he's one of those rare actors that kind of treads that line, the action hero line, because he's, and I hate to be a jerk, but he's small enough and unassuming enough and, you know, not quite the big, bulky, ass-kicky type body that he could still pull off the slick.
But I think the Predator needs more, it needs less martial arts style to it than the way it was of just kind of a seasoned warrior.
Yeah, I can.
I think Jean-Claude would have brought too much of a human style to the way the Predator moved and operated. Like,
how did the Predators get to ancient China or ancient Japan and learn the ways of Kung Fu type question?
I'm sure the comic books would have found some way that they taught them to the Chinese.
Yeah,
or whatnot,
I know. But, you know, yeah, it would have been a very, very different character, I think. And, yeah, it would have been... I think you're right. You look at the Predator and if you could sit down and have coffee with him and actually have a conversation with him, I think you would see that grizzled warrior of much more Klingon-like. You know, I was bred to fight. I'm going to go out and fight and I'm going to die. I've been at this a long time. I need a worthy opponent. And that's kind of what they were looking for, really. I mean, especially
well,
in
and then
Alien
technically, if you read the novelization,
yeah,
that Predator was female.
Really,
in the books, Predator females are larger and more aggressive than the males. The Predator in the first movie is a well-seasoned veteran female. The Predator in Predator 2, which also explains why it does make some of the mistakes it does. It's an arrogant young Predator on its first solo hunt.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So they actually do play that off like that was intended.
Yeah, I could see
you
that.
You know,
I mean,
the predators act totally differently because they're different, technically different, you know,
and I guess
sexes and the different styles.
Yeah, and if you look at the males versus females in the insect world, it's generally the females that are the
aggressors.
The aggressors, yeah.
Right. Now, sticking with Jean-Claude,
okay.
Not a movie. Would have been funner if he was in the movie because he would have been perfectly cast. Johnny Cage in the original Mortal Kombat game was supposed to be Jean-Claude doing all the motion capture for that. He ended up dropping out. If you look at the code in the arcade cabinets, the Johnny Cage character is still called Van Damme in
really?
The actual code.
Oh, okay.
Because that was supposed to be, and especially look at like one of Johnny's move, the leg split, punch you in the balls.
Yeah,
that's straight out of Kickboxer.
Yeah, it is.
Or no, Bloodsport.
Bloodsport.
So, if Jean-Claude had stuck with it, do you think that would have helped or hurt the Mortal Kombat game?
I don't think it would have made a difference to the game.
How about
itself?
If Jean-Claude had been cast as Johnny Cage in the movie, though?
Now, that would have been even
that's
better.
That's why
than
I said he would have been perfect
he really
for the Johnny
Cage.
Because Johnny Cage was clearly, I mean, the character, the style, everything was clearly
but
based off of Jean-Claude.
But let's face it, Jean-Claude chose sides when he did the Street Fighter movie. You can't do a Street Fighter movie and a Mortal Kombat movie. I think he chose the worst of the two, frankly.
The Street Fighter movie has one funny scene in it. It's a scene that's supposed to be funny, too.
Why was that Raul Julia's last movie? Why?
His kids loved the game.
Why couldn't they have just... He really should have been on this earth long enough to make one more really, really good movie and just gone out on that, not on Street Fighter.
But like I said, there's one funny scene in that I legitimately laugh at. There's the scene where they're all watching, you know, Zangief and all them are all watching on a monitor a truck about to plow into their building. And once they realize it, Zangief goes, "Quick, change the channel." I'm like, okay, that was legitimately funny. That was a legitimately funny line.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
It's like that was witty. That was very witty.
Yeah, I can see it. So,
okay, then how about Resident Evil as Dino Crisis?
Wait a minute. You're blowing my mind here, man.
Okay, they made Resident Evil, the first game, in 1995.
Okay.
When they made Resident Evil 2, they made it with very like skin-tight costumes for the female character, very metallic. It was set in the future. It was set in like a city of the future and whatnot. Because you never saw Raccoon City in the first game.
Right.
And they got three quarters done with Resident Evil 2. It's now called Resident Evil 1.5.
Oh, yeah.
And they decided to go with a different route for what they actually went with Resident Evil 2, keeping the aesthetic similar to like a survival horror.
Okay.
But they took all that coding and made it into the game Dino Crisis.
Oh, wow.
So in a way, the first Dino Crisis game is actually Resident Evil 2.
You know...
So now that I've said that, can you see Resident Evil as Dino Crisis?
No.
Even though it was technically.
That was a good decision on the publisher's part. I mean, Resident Evil, when you talk about survival horror, Silent Hill comes to mind, Resident Evil comes to mind, Alone in the Dark comes to mind. And nowadays Amnesia comes to mind. Which is actually kind of funny. You know, that one game that everybody forgets.
I totally forgot about that game.
But these are genre-defining games. And if you were to take Resident Evil and throw it into Dino Crisis-type aesthetics and whatnot, you would have been like, okay, so the first one is a survival horror, and the second one is... This thing. Which... In the Resident Evil series, there have been some where you just go, and then the series just fucks off and does its own thing.
Pretty much every game after Code Veronica.
Yeah, but it doesn't... That was a good decision. That was a very good decision.
All right, how about this? You've seen Predators, right?
Yes.
Okay, the original scripted ending, the only reason it was not done, they could not get the actor.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Now, remember how Predators ends with you know, them blowing up the Predator ship and all that. And then you see all the other boxes parachuting down and they're like, oh, you know, it's starting again. Right?
Okay.
The original scripted ending. A Predator ship comes down, decloaks, a bunch of Predators get out. The leader takes off his mask and it's Arnold. And he goes, you passed the test. Let's get these guys armored up.
That would have pissed me off.
I swear to God, I'm not making that up. Only reason they cut that, they couldn't get Arnold.
Good. Because frankly, I would have taken out my pistol and started shooting a movie screen. Scott Arnold can't feel that. You're just shooting a screen. I don't care. Bam, 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 bam. You know.
But yes. Dutch from the first movie apparently has been fighting with predators in the original script. But yes, that was the original ending. Clearly to you, I don't need to ask, better or worse.
No, you don't. No. I would have gotten on a plane, flown out to Los Angeles Airport.
And beat the shit out of Robert Rodriguez?
Taken a train from Los Angeles to Sacramento. Gotten off the train, taken a taxi to City Hall, walked in to the California Senate / California House cross meeting when the governor would be there, and I would walk up to Arnold, and I would bitch slap him, and I would walk out.
That's for predators.
Bam! Have a good day. No.
All right, sticking with Predator and Arnold. How long has it been since you've seen Predator 2?
It's been a long while because I didn't really care for that movie. I
think it's the best of the franchise.
Well, that's fucking wonderful. I didn't like it. If you can't deal with somebody not liking something you did, bite my ass.
I'm leaving. but okay, Gary Busey's role of Peter Keyes.
Yes,
that was originally supposed to be Dutch. After his encounter with the Predator, he joined the feds to hunt them.
No.
That was originally written as Dutch. No. And in probably a wise career move, Arnold turned it down to do Terminator 2.
Very wise career move.
But they had to rewrite the character after, you know, they didn't have Dutch anymore.
Right.
But that was written as Dutch. Would that have changed Predator 2 for better or worse? I think for worse, personally.
Me too. We look, when it comes to Predator, we saw Dutch's story in the first one. It ended. Predator 2 is somebody else's story. That's the way it was meant to be. It's a different Predator. Like you said, it's a different sex. It's a different...
It's set in the future of 1997.
Future of 1997 with all the flying cars and everything. But the simple fact is we've seen Dutch's story. We're done.
But see, here's the thing about Predators. They were still alluding to that ending. Remember when Maria's telling the story? And after his encounter, Dutch vanished. It was almost like he vanished off the face of the earth. They were still alluding to what was the scripted ending in the final cut of the film.
But that's fucking wonderful. I'm glad that it didn't happen. I am very glad.
I saw your face when I told you. You actually thought I was... Admit it. You thought I was fucking with you at first.
No, because I know you better than that. Usually when you're fucking with me, I can tell, and I knew you were serious, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... No. No.
And I just think it's fascinating when you look at movies in this what-if scenario of, like, you've seen the Phantasm films, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
Phantasm.
I enjoy the shit out of them.
Phantasm 2. Michael Baldwin starred as Mike in Phantasm 1, 3, and 4. But Phantasm 2 was by Universal, so they needed a pretty boy actor.
Exactly.
Well, James LeGro got the role.
Okay.
If James LeGro had turned it down, the next choice was a then unknown guy named Brad Pitt.
Wise career choice to turn it down.
He turned it down for Thelma and Louise.
It's a very wise career choice.
But that was almost Brad Pitt.
And I don't know. I've seen Brad Pitt do action. He can do action pretty decently. He can do suspense pretty decently. He's not a bad actor.
Has he ever done? I mean, he's done slasher movies like Cutting Class and stuff. Has he ever done a straight out mind fuck horror like Phantasm 2? You know, with people getting their heads drilled open and
Seven
shit.
Seven comes close.
Again, that's more in almost slasher. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm talking something like Phantasm 2.
I think so.
Would have liked to have seen that. Like, okay, Hocus Pocus. I know it's a movie you watch every Halloween. Ugh,
yeah. Okay, correct. It's a movie that Dawn watches and therefore makes me watch every Halloween.
Okay, but the character of Biggs, you know, the talking cat, and then
right.
You finally see him at the end.
Right.
First of all, the guy at the end, you know who that is?
No.
That's Sean Murray. That's
The Hobbit.
No. That's McGee from NCIS.
Oh, okay.
The actor that turned down that role?
Yes.
A then unknown kid named Leonardo DiCaprio. He went to do What's Eating Gilbert Grape instead.
Again, wise career choice, I think.
But how different would that have made Hocus Pocus? Not just in retrospect, you know, because obviously it'd be a big popular movie
today. Yeah.
But Leonardo DiCaprio is the voice of a talking cat.
I can see it. Especially younger Leo. I could see it. I don't think it would have changed the movie all that much, frankly.
Isn't it sometimes amazing just how different a movie would be if an actor hadn't said no? A big burp there.
Yeah. Having issues tonight. I'm sorry, everybody. I had hiccups before the show. Now I'm burping and yawning, and I think pretty soon my bowels are going to explode.
Good thing we only got 4 minutes left.
This is true. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard with this What If game to say that it would have been better or worse.
Well, have you seen the movie Hardware? The brilliant Richard Stanley 1990 dystopian flick?
I've got it, but it's on my to-watch list. I have not seen it.
All right, well, it stars Dylan McDermott.
Okay.
But if not for Dylan McDermott, it would have starred Bill Paxton. And I'm thinking, oh, man, they would have played that character totally different.
Yeah.
Dylan McDermott and Bill Paxton would have played that same character of Moses Baxter totally differently than Dylan McDermott did on screen.
Any role you put them in, they're two completely different kinds of actors. So, yeah.
But that's why I think it's kind of funny to find out, like, who didn't take certain roles. Like, or just how different we played it in our Star Trek Voyager episode that Janine Bjoid, or however you pronounce her name,
yeah,
as Captain Janeway.
Horrible.
She was fucking horrendous,
yes,
in that part, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
That
awful.
Would have just destroyed Voyager even before the writers could have.
Yeah.
And they did a good job on their own, but just imagine if they hadn't kicked her out after a week of shooting and recast her with Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, that would have been really bad.
Would you quit yawning? Jesus.
I'm sorry. It's been a long day.
You can't hold it for 3 minutes?
I am so sorry. No, it's an involuntary action, dude. You gotta yawn. You gotta yawn.
You know, so I just think this is funny. And you do see this in books sometimes, too, where, you know, you'll read years later, the author originally wanted to kill some character that became, a major, major character in, like, the third book of the series.
Oh,
and they were like, I wanted to kill them in the second chapter of the first book or something.
To use a movie as an example, like Duke and G.I. Joe?
Duke should be dead.
Yes, he should.
Also, let me use the last 2 minutes. I was at Walmart the other night. People Magazine, Channing Tatum, the sexiest man alive. Now, okay, I don't find men attractive, but that is what women find attractive, really? Channing fucking I mean, I kind of got it when they went with Sean Connery or Kevin Costner. Channing Tatum? You're bisexual. Channing Tatum?
Could have been worse.
How?
I still haven't figured out how anybody finds Gerard Depardieu attractive.
I was just actually offended at the whole Channing Tatum on the cover of People as Sexiest Man Alive. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? That egomaniacal, non-acting son of a bitch.
Could have been Dane Cook.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's that gay. I don't think there are gays that are gay enough to find Dane Cook attractive.
Although he does play a gay role in Ted. And it's the best role that Dane Cook has ever had. Not only is he gay, but he's silent. Not a single line.
That must have been hard for Dane Cook.
I know it was hard for Dane. You can see it on his face. He's like, I want to tell everybody everything all at once and make it funny, kind of.
And I'll steal the jokes from everybody else.
Yeah. So.
All right, on that note, go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code STATIC to get all the free stuff that Santa and them will bring you and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You don't want to yawn for the last 15 seconds?
And again, thank you, everybody, for your support this year. Merry Christmas. And we will see you in our next episode.
We will?
Yes, we will. Bye.